Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind. Graphic Audio presents Lilith St. Croix's
Jill Kismet.
My Lord God, do not forsake me when I face Hell's legions. In thy name and with thy blessing, I go forth to cleanse the night.
Book 4.
Flesh Service.
Narrated by Julianne Elliott. With performances by Thomas Keegan, Christopher Sheeran, Stephen Carpenter, Elizabeth Jernigan, Joe Brack, Ken Jackson, Alyssa Wilmoth, Michael Glenn, Colleen Delaney, Mort Shelby, Yasmin Toisan, Eric Messner, Lily Beacon, Ren Casey, James Lewis, Richard Rowan, Terence Hazelford, Gregory Gordon, Tony Nam, Christopher Grayville, and Nanette Savard.
Out here in the desert, just outside the Santa Luz city limits, the two-lane highway was a ribbon reaching to nowhere. The stars glimmered, hard, cold points of light. A new moon, already tired, was a nail paring in the sky, weak compared to the shine of city glow from the valley. I'd parked on the shoulder. The dust was settling to the ragged pavement around me. I rolled my shoulders back under heavy leather, my fingers resting on a gun butt. They pulled aside on a gravel access road, as custom dictated, or fear demanded. Their headlights were separate stars. The limousine pointed directly at my city, a long raggle taggle spreading out behind it. Minivans, trucks, trailers, and one old Chevy flatbed from the 60s with bright spatters of glittering tie-dye paint all over its cab. One black limousine crouched low to the dusty ground. The animals were sprawling or pacing in semi-trailers. I could smell them all. Dung and sweat and glitter and fried food, with the bright, sweet corruption of hellbreed laid over the top. Another pair of headlights pierced the distance. I waited, leaning against a wine-red 1968 Pontiac Bonneville. She wasn't as sweet as my Impala, or as forgiving on tight corners. But she was a good car. Cirque de Charnoux, in Baroque lettering highlighted with gold, was painted on everything except the glossy limo. Under the fierce desert sun, it would look washed out and tawdry. At night, it glittered, taunted, seduced. They're good at that. I wonder if they hold classes for it in hell. Saul lit a charvel. He studied each and every car, and the taut silence around him was almost as tense as the way he tilted his chin up, testing the wind.
I don't like this.
Saul turned his sleek, new shorn head slightly to watch the headlights arrowing toward us. A few silver charms were knotted into his hair with red thread. He had a small copper bowl of them in the bathroom, all the ones he'd worn before his mother died, tied back in as his hair got longer. I contented myself with a shrug. The scar on my right wrist pulsed, the bloom of corruption on the caravan plucking at it. I'd stuffed the leather wrist cuff in my pocket, wanting my full measure of hell-tainted strength tonight.
Just in case.
A baked, sage-touched wind off the cooling desert ruffled my hair, made the silver charms tied into long, dark curls tumble together. I had no reason to draw silence over me like a cloak right now. We'd arrived at the meeting spot first, slightly after dusk. They'd shown up as soon as true dark folded over the desert. A long chain of bright, hungry headlights. Nobody moved, though I could see a few faint flickers when someone lit a cigarette in the cab of one of the semis. Their lights were a glare, but not directed at me. Instead, the flood of white speared the desert toward my city, etching sharp, hurtful shadows behind every pebble and scrubby bush. Faint dips in the road made the sword of light from the approaching car waver. It was speeding, smoothly taking the dips and curves. It was another limo, sleek and freshly waxed, gleaming in the night. My pulse tried to ratchet up, was strictly controlled. Anticipation, fear, which one was I feeling at the prospect of seeing him? You know, I don't like this either. A hunter spends so much time holding back the tide of hell. It feels just damn wrong to be inviting Hellbreed in. And I would much rather put off seeing Perry again. There had been no visits to the Monday to pay for a share of a Hellbreed's power, thundering now through the scar on my wrist. And I'd used the mark more or less freely for months now. I was in the right, and he'd welched on the deal first. It made me more nervous than I'd like to admit. Especially since it seemed stronger now than it ever had while I was visiting the Monday every month. Strong enough that I had trouble controlling it every once in a while. Strong enough that it worries me. As his limousine coasted over the near rises, I marked the position of every vehicle in the caravan again. There were a lot of them. I heard it was always a shock to see how big the Cirque was when set up. How many souls they pulled in for their nightly games. How during daylight it always seemed exponentially smaller, but still, the shadows held secrets and dangers. And eyes. It wasn't comforting information, and some of the pictures and old woodcuts Hutch had dug up for me before he went on vacation were thought-provoking and stomach-churning at once. The gloss of his limousine's paint job, powder bloomed with fine crackling threads of bruised etheric energy. For a mad moment, I thought it was going to peel some rubber and speed off into the dark. Of course, if it did, I would be able to refuse entry. The Cirque would go on its way and I'd breathe a huge sigh of relief. But no. The shark gleaming car just executed a perfect 3-point turnaround, brought to a controlled stop on the other side of the road.
Show off.
The urge died on my face as the door opened and Perry rose from the back of the limo. Immaculate, as always. Only this time, he didn't wear his usual pale linen suit. It was almost a shock to see him in a tuxedo. His pale hair slicked back, and the blandness of his face turned by a trick of light into a sword-sharp handsomeness before settling into its accustomed contours. His eyes lit gas flame blue, and he didn't glance at the dingy collection of cars huddling on the access road. He rested his bent arm on the door and studied me. There had been no bodyguard to open it for him, no gorilla-built trader or slim, beautiful Hellbreed to stand attentively beside him. Another oddity, seeing him without a posse. The contact of cooler night air on my skin turned unbearably sharp, little prickling needles of sensory acuity. The scar turned hard, drawing across the nerves of my right arm like a violin bow. Perry strode loosely across the road, and I could almost feel everyone in the caravan take a deep breath. The other limo's door swung open. I heard feet hitting the dusty ground. Two pairs. Hellbreed like limousines. I've heard politicians do, too. Oh, and rock stars. Thought-provoking, isn't it? I peeled myself away from the Bonneville's hood. Saul stayed where he was, but I felt his attention. It was like sunlight against my back as I strode forward, meeting them just where the road met the shoulder. I ended up with one foot on the tarmac and the other on dirt. Perry was wearing mirror-polished wingtips, The crease in his pants was sharp enough to cut. The ringmaster standing at my left was a tall, thin hellbreed, with a thatch of crow-dark hair over a sweet, innocent face with bladed cheekbones. They're all beautiful, the damned. It's the blush of a tubercular apple, that beauty. And it rots in the gaze if you keep looking steadily enough. Bones a millimeter too high. A skin sheen just a degree or two off. A chin angled in a simulacrum of humanity, but with something else under the skin. Little things that don't add up grab the attention. Then the attractiveness reasserts itself. It's the mask they wear to fool their prey, but a hunter back from hell can see under it. We can see the twisting. This one wore a thin-lipped smile that was far, far too wide. I looked for his cane and didn't see it. His black suit was a shabby, fraying copy of Perry's, a worn top hat dangling from loose, expressive strangler's fingers. When his lips parted, a long ridge of sharp bone with faint shadows that could be tooth demarcation showed. The ridge came down to points where the canines would be, then swept back into the cavern of his mouth. In very dim light, human eyes might mistake him for one of their own. A hunter never would. Diamond insect feet walked up my back, leaving goose flesh in their wake. A muscle in the ringmaster's elegant cheek twitched as he surveyed Perry. I eyed the second one from the cirque. A small, soft, boyish trader with huge blue eyes and a fine down on his round apple cheeks. My stomach turned over, hard.
Kiss. A delight, as usual.
Don't call me that, Perry. Let's just get this over with. I have work to do tonight. I've got a child-killing traitor to catch, and you assholes are wasting my time.
As do we all.
Oh, always business. Welcome to Santa Luz, Henri.
Thank you, Hyperion.
I passed my gaze down the small, doe-innocent traitor. He was thin and bird-like, in a white t-shirt and jeans. And he made me uneasy. Most of the time, the bad is right out there where you can see it. If it's not, you have to keep watching until it shows itself.
This is Icarus.
The trader leaned into the ringmaster's side, and the breed put one stick-thin arm over him. A flick of the loose fingers against the t-shirt sleeve, probably meant to be soothing, and the parody of parental posture almost made acid crawl up the back of my throat.
Do you have the collar?
I reached into a left-hand pocket of my trench coat. Cool metal resounded under my fingertips, and I had another serious run of thoughts about stepping back, turning on my heel, and heading for the Pontiac. Come on, Jill. You know you can't do that when the Cirque comes to town. The compact the Cirque de Charnoux live under is unbreakable, a treaty between dark and light. They serve a purpose, and any hunter on their worldwide circuit knows as much.
Just goes against every instinct a decent hunter possesses to let the fuckers keep breathing.
Erlo sulet odomok muder tsopte.
English, Perry. None of your goddamn helitong here.
Oh, so rude of me. I was merely remarking on your beauty tonight, my dear.
Oh, for fuck's sake. I shouldn't have dignified him with a response.
The next time one of you hellspawn rattles off in tong, I'm going back to work. The Cirque can go down the line, and you, Perry, can go suck a few eggs.
Charming. Is she always this way?
Oh, yes. Always a winsome delight, our kiss.
Perry's slight smile hadn't changed. The faint blue shine from his irises didn't waver either. He looked far too amused. And the scar was quiescent against my skin. Usually he played with it, waves of pain or sick pleasure pouring up my arm, fiddling with my internal thermostat, trying to make me respond. Tonight, he didn't, and that was thought-provoking as well. Only I wasn't sure what thoughts it was supposed to provoke, which was probably the point. My fingers curled around the metal and brought it out. The collar was a serious piece of business. A spiked circle of silver, supple and deadly looking. Each spike was as long as my thumb from middle knuckle to fingertip, and wicked sharp. Blue light flowed under the surface of the metal, not quite breaking free in response to the contamination of two Hellbreed and a traitor so close. But my silver apprentice ring, snug against my left third finger, did crack a spark. It was gratifying to see the little traitor shiver slightly. I shook the collar a little, the hinges moving freely. It trembled like a live thing, hypnotic blue swirling. Rules. I had their attention. Actually, just one rule. Don't fuck with my town. You're here on sufferance.
Next, she'll start in about blood atonement.
I held the ringmaster's gaze. My smart eye, the left one, the blue one, was dry, but I didn't blink. He did. First one eye, then the other. Slight lizard-like movements. The traitor slid away from under his hand. Still, their auras swirled together, and I could almost see the thick, spiraled rope of a blood bond between them. Icaros took two steps toward me and paused, looking up with those big blue eyes. The flat shine of the dust lying over his irises was the same as every other traitor's, was a reminder that this kid, however old he really was, had bargained with hell, traded away something essential in return for something else. His lashes quivered.
First mistake.
The next was his hands, twisting together as if he was nervous.
Two.
If the ringmaster's hands were flaccid and delicate, the trader's were broad farm boy's paws, at odds with the rest of his delicate beauty.
I wonder what he traded for to end up here.
We'll be good.
Save it. Get down on your knees.
That is unnecessary.
I'm the hunter here, Hellspawn. I decide what's necessary. Now, Icaros, get down on your knees.
The traitor sank down gracefully, but not before his fingers clenched for the barest second. Big, broad hands. And if they closed around my neck, it might be a job and a half to pry them away. He might have looked like the sort of tchotchka doll old ladies like to put up on their shelves, but he was a traitor. If he looked innocent and harmless, it was only the lure used to get someone close enough for those strong fingers. And that tremulous smile would be the last thing a victim ever saw. I tested the collar on Icaros's neck, then stepped back. The collar glinted. My apprentice ring thrummed with force, and I twitched my hand experimentally. The traitor tipped forward, as if he was pulled off center. His knees ground into the dust. Every bit of silver I wore, apprentice ring, silver chain holding the blessed carved ruby at my throat, the charms in my hair, chimed. My stomach turned.
Just like having a dog on a leash.
I nodded. Let my hand drop.
You can get up now, Icaros.
Not just yet.
Perry stepped forward. I didn't move. But every nerve in my body pulled itself tight as a drumhead, and my pulse gave a nasty leap. They could hear it, of course, and if they took it for a show of weakness, things might get nasty. Icaros hunched, thin shoulders coming up. My left hand touched a gun butt, cool metal under my fingertips.
That's close enough, Perry.
Oh, not nearly.
Perry shifted his weight, and his aura deepened like a bruise. The scar woke to prickling, stinging life. My gun came out, leveled, barrel glinting.
I said, that's close enough. Give me a reason. Dear God, just give me a reason.
He shrugged and remained where he was. The ringmaster was smiling faintly. His thin lips closed over the tooth ridges. I backed up two steps, did not holster the gun.
The chain, Perry. Hurry up.
Perry smiled, A good-tempered grin with razor blades underneath. It was the type of smile that said he was contemplating a good piece of art, or ass. Something he could pick up with very little trouble. His eyes all but danced, a quick flicking motion with his fingers, the scar plucking, and a loop of darkness coiled in his hands. His left hand snapped forward. Icarus jerked forward as the darkness solidified. His eyes rolled up into his head and he collapsed. Spidery lines of darkness crawled up every inch of pale, exposed flesh, spiked writing marching in even rows, as if a tattoo had come to life and started colonizing his skin. Perry's hands dropped.
Done and done, Hyperion. Is your hostage.
The ringmaster's cane had appeared. A slim black length with a round faceted crystal the size of a pool ball set atop it. The crystal looked like an almighty big glass doorknob, except for the sick greenish light in its depths. He tapped the ground twice, paused, tapped a third time with the copper-shod bottom.
Should we break the law, he will suffer. And through him I will suffer. Through me all shall suffer. He is our pledge to the hunter and to the bower in this city.
The trader struggled up to his hands and knees. The collar sparked, a single point of blue light etching sharp shadows behind the pebbles and dirt underneath him.
So it is. May then your efforts be fruitful, Brother Henri.
No less than your own. Are you satisfied, Hunter? May we pass?
Go on in. Just behave yourselves. Icarus struggled to his feet. He moved slowly, as if hurt. I finally lowered the gun, watching Perry. He was grinning like he'd just discovered gold in his underpants. His face wavered between sharply handsome and bland as usual. And the tip of his tongue flickered out briefly to touch the corner of his thin lips. Even in the darkness, the color, a wet cherry red, was wrong.
Come, Icarus.
The ringmaster took the trader's elbow and steered him away, back toward the convoy. The creaking train of etheric bruising began to move onto hardtop from the access road, turning for the well of light that was my city below. As the limo passed, I saw the trader slumped against a back passenger side window, and the inside of the vehicle crawled with green phosphorescence, shining out past the tinting. As they wound down the highway, they started to glitter. Each car, even the ancient Chevy, dewed with hard candy of false sparkling. They wasted no time in starting the seduction. Jesus. Perry stood, watching. I took another two steps back. The scar was still hard and hot against my wrist, like almost burning metal clapped against cool skin. I waited for him to do something. A conversational gambit, or a physical one to make me react. Instead, he turned on his heel and strode for the limousine.
Good night, sweetheart.
Amazing. This is probably the first time in years he hasn't fucked with me.
It rattled me more than it should. But then again, when the Cirque de Charnoux comes to town, a hunter is right to feel a little rattled. Mine is definitely not a day job. The day is for sleeping. A long golden time of sunny safety hits about noon and peters out at about 5 in the winter, somewhere around 8 in the summer. I like to be home, curled up in bed with Saul's arms around me. I do not like wrestling with a trader in a filthy storm sewer reeking of the death of small animals. I don't like being thrown and hitting concrete so hard bones break. And I hate it when they try to drown me.
I can't even count how many people have tried to drown me. And I live in the desert, for Christ's sake.
This close to the river, there's always seepage in the bottom of the tunnels. And the traitor, a long, thin grasshopper who had once been a man, filed teeth champing and yellow-green saliva spewing, shoved me down further, sludge squirting up. Bracing myself against the slimy bottom of the pipe with my free hand, I whirled, clocking the traitor on the side of the head with a knife-hilt braced fist. The traitor lost his grip on me in the slime and scudge. I got a mouthful of usable air and almost wished I hadn't breathed. The smell was that bad. Candlelight splashed the crusted, weeping walls. The traitor had set up an altar down here. Bits of rotting flesh and blood-stiffened fur festooning the low concrete shelf. Cats and dogs had gone missing in this area for a while. But the traitor hadn't bumped above the radar until small children started disappearing. I had more than a sneaking suspicion where some of those children could be found. Parts of them, anyway. My knife spun around my fingers, silver loaded along the flat of the blade, and I slashed with every ounce of strength my bent-back left arm could come up with. The blade bit deep across one bulbous compound eye. Green stuff splattered, too thick to be slime, but too thin to be pudding. My fist exploded upwards, pistol in hand. The carved ruby at my throat crackled with a single bloody spark as my finger squeezed back on the trigger. The recoil had kicked almost too hard even for my hell-tainted strength. I'd finally gotten around to getting a custom set of guns, like most hunters do after a while. And I'd wondered since, why had it taken me so long? 9mm are nice. There's nothing like something bigger to pop a hole in a traitor. Some male hunters go for the guns on the maxim that bigger is better. Female hunters generally go for accuracy of fire. I decided to go for both, since I've got the strength and have no complex about the size of my dick. I ignored the buzzing from my pager in its padded pocket and took aim again as the traitor began to move. I flung my left hand forward, and the knife flew from it, blue light streaking like oil along its blade. It hit solid in his ribs. Even that didn't take the pep out of him. Kill kids in my town, will you? My right hand blurred, coming up full of knife. My feet moved independently of me, and I hurled myself at him. We collided with rib-snapping force. I fainted with my left hand, and he took the bait, grabbing for my left arm. Stupid fucker. My right hand flicked, and the smell of a ripped gut exploded out. A foul carrion stench. The scar pulsed wetly against my wrist, feeding hellish strength through my arm. I twisted my wrist, hard, breaking the suction of muscle against the blade. My knee came up. I shoved, and he went down jerking as the corruption of hell raced through his tissues. It devours everything in its path. The bargain they make claiming the flesh, quite possibly the soul. And the body dances like a half-smashed spider. The traitor collapsed inwards, his compound eyes falling in, runnels of foulness greasing his cheeks.
Oh, Jesus!
I noticed my ribs twitch as they began to heal, the bone painfully fusing itself back together. I was bleeding, and my right leg felt a little unsteady. The candles kept burning, lumpy, misshapen tapers, their thin flames struggling in the noxious air, stuck to any surfaces above the water's edge. My blue eye smarted and filled with hot water as it untangled the web of etheric bruising hanging over every surface. Little crawling strands, pools of sickness a normal person would feel like a chill draft on the nape or an uncomfortable feeling it seems best to ignore. I waded toward the altar, squinting at the drift of small bones on it as I approached. Some were tangled with fur, others with bits of cloth that might have once been clothes. Random bits of meat were scattered amidst the foulness. My fingers tingled. It took a short while before the thin blue whispering flames of banefire would stay lit along my fingers.
I'm sorry. It's my job to protect you. I'm sorry.
Four kids we knew about. Three we suspected. Another two I was reasonably sure of.
Nine little vulnerable lives. Sucked dry by a monster who bargained with hell.
Who knew what those kids would have grown up to do? Save lives? Find a cure for cancer? Bring some joy to the world? But not now. Now there was only this vengeance in a filthy, stinking sewer. I cast the banefire, my fingers flicking forward and long, thin jets of blue flame splitting the dimness. The bane would burn clean and leave a blessing in its wake. A thin layer, inimical to Hellbreed and other contagion. I went through the sodden pockets of what was left of the corpse. Luck was with me, and I found a wallet. It went in my pocket, and I half-dragged, half-floated the squishing, still sluggishly contorting body over to the burning altar. When I dumped him on it, a shower of sparks went up. And I suddenly felt queasy at the thought that he was lying on top of his victims. Nothing to be done about it. I had to burn them all, or the Hellbreed he'd traded with might be able to reach out and get himself, or herself, a nice, fresh, rotten zombie corpse or two. Now that I have his ID, I've got a fighting chance of finding whatever breed he traded with and serve justice on him, her, or it. I headed back for the surface. It took me a good 20 minutes to retrace the route I'd tracked him along. When I finally found my entry point, a set of rungs leading up to an open manhole, welcome sunlight pouring down, I looked up, and a familiar shadow moved at the top.
Hello, kitten!
Hey, Catkin! How's everything up in daylight?
Quiet as a mouse.
I started climbing the metal rungs.
Oh, I wish this wasn't so much business as usual.
My boots found solid ground. It was a dead-end street near Barazata Park, the spire of Santa Esperanza lifting into the heat haze. Blessed sunlight poured hot and heavy over me, just like syrup. In the distance, the barrio weltered.
Ugh, smells like you had a good time.
The fun just never ends.
He's bagged.
Good deal.
Saul hadn't wanted to stay topside, but I'd needed him up there watching the manhole in case the traitor doubled back. Or at least, that's what I'd told him. He didn't make any fuss over it, but his body language warned me that he was an unhappy wearer. And we were probably going to have a talk about it soon.
There are other things to talk about, too. Big fun.
You okay?
Not really. Oh.
He reeled me in. Closed his arms around my shoulders and we stood for a moment, me staring at his chest where the small vial of blessed water hung on a silver chain. No blue swirled in the vial's depths. He pulled me even closer, slid an arm around my waist, and I could finally lay my head down on his chest. The rumble of his purr, a cat wears response to a mate's distress, went straight through me. Turning my bones into jelly. It didn't stop the way I was quivering, though. Body amped up into red line and adrenaline dumping through the bloodstream. He didn't try to keep me when I eased away from him. He just let go a fraction of a second later than he had to.
Want to tell me about it?
It's over. That's all.
Good enough.
Saul studied me for a long moment before turning away. The manhole was flung to the side. I hadn't been particularly careful at that point. I just wanted to get at the motherfucker. It was bulky, but he got his fingers under it and hauled it around. Fished my pager out of its pocket. The number was familiar.
Who's calling?
Galena.
Probably got another load of silver in. Oh, Christ. I hope it's not more trouble. At least it's not Monty.
You're such an optimist.
The smile tugging at my lips felt unnatural, especially with the stink simmering off my clothes and the sick rage turning in small circles under my heart. He smiled back, crouching easily next to the manhole cover. The light was kind to him, bringing out the red-black burnish in his cropped, charm-sprinkled hair and the perfect texture of his skin. He tanned well, and a fine crinkle of laugh lines fanned out from his eyes when he grinned. They smoothed away as he sobered, looking up at me. We regarded each other. He, of all people, never had any trouble meeting my mismatched gaze. And each time he looked at me like this, dark eyes wide open and depthless velvet, I got the same little electric zing of contact, like he was seeing past every wall I'd ever built to protect myself. Seeing me, it never got old. Or less scary. Being looked at like that will give you a whole new definition of naked. It's just one of the things about dating a wearer that'll do it. I slipped the pager back in its pocket. I'm sorry, Saul. I just...
No need, Jilly Bean.
I don't mean to...
I said there was no need.
Saul glanced at the street over my shoulder. The Pontiac crouched, parked cockeyed to block anyone from coming down here, a looping trail of rubber smeared on the road behind it. I'd been going at least 70 before I stood on the brakes.
You really wanted this guy.
I really want them all, sweetheart. Kids.
Yeah. You must be hungry. We can stop for a burrito on the way to Galena's.
That sounds like a good idea. That shack on Sullivan Street is probably still open. Ugh. Avery, when it rains, it pours. Shit. On second thought, maybe we better just go. Avery probably needs an exorcism, and I can call Galena from his office afterward.
Dinner after that?
Sure. Unless the world's going to end.
You know, that sort of thing is depressingly routine. How about calzones at home? I've got that dough left over.
Calzones sound good. Let's get a move on. The apartment was on Silverado, in a slumping, tired-looking concrete building. The old kind, with incinerators in the basement and metal chicken wire in front of the elevator doors. The wallpaper had once been expensive, but was now faded, torn, and a haven for creeping mold. If the elevator had worked, the place could probably have gotten on a historical register. As it was, the whole building smelled of fried food, beer, and desperation. We moved up a short flight of stairs, spotting the cracked open door before we even reached the top. I don't usually show up for exorcisms covered in gunk and stinking to high heaven. The victim doesn't give a rat's ass by the time I'm called in, but my fellow exorcists probably do. Avery didn't even seem to notice. His brown eyes sparked with feverish intensity. His mournful, handsome face animated and sharp, despite the bruising spreading up his left cheek. I stood at the foot of the bed, studied the body thrashing against restraints for a few moments.
Do not ever, ever rush an exorcism in beginning stages, no matter how pressed for time you think you are.
That was the first thing Mikhail taught me when he began training me to rip possessors out of people. Hi, Avery. What do we got here?
Guy's name is Emilio Ricardo, 30, dishwasher. Not the usual victim.
I folded my arms. The carved ruby on its short silver chain at my throat sparked once, a bloody flash in the dimness. Saul stood near the door, leaning against the wall with his eyes half closed. The apartment was small, with none of the usual signs of possession. No hint that the victim was a shut-in, nothing covering the windows, no scribbles of demented writing and whatever substance was on hand on the walls or mirrors, no smell of rotting food, no foul slick of etheric bruising over every surface. And possessors aren't that fond of poverty. They like to get their flabby little mental fingers in the middle and upper classes. It's almost enough to make you feel charitable.
finding at least one thing that doesn't prey on the poor. There was a metal bed the victim was tied to, a chair, and a table in the greasy kitchen, and an old, heavy television balanced on a TV cart. The floor was linoleum, and the whole place was the size of a cracker box.
No, definitely not the usual victim.
But they are creatures of opportunity, too, the possessors. The victim was male, another almost oddity. Women get possessed more often, between the higher incidence of psychic talent and the constant cultural training to be a victim. But a man wasn't unheard of. It's about 60-40.
How did you get him tied down?
Cold cocked. He'll have a headache for a while, assuming he ever wakes up.
Avery rubbed at his jaw gingerly. He'd done a good job strapping the man down. He looked thin but wiry strong, fighting against the restraints, his skin rippling. But the candy sick scent of corruption was missing. That bothered me.
He doesn't smell right.
Smells like B.O. and fish, but it just seems off. That's why I called you. Didn't feel right, and you're always bitching about trusting those instincts.
Because when you don't, you end up getting your ass handed to you. And then you get all embarrassed when I do show up and bail you out.
Humility is a virtue, Kismet.
So is discretion. I suck at both. Didn't you notice?
I was too bowled over by your witty repartee. Not to mention your leather pants. What do you think?
I think he's possessed, but I don't know by what yet. Grab a mirror.
Avery bent to dig in his little black exorcist bag on the greasy linoleum floor.
Hair.
Avery had a small round hand mirror, the type exorcist buy by the case. I took it and hopped over the end of the bed, my feet landing on either side of the victim's hips. I crouched easily and kept the mirror out of sight, tucked against my leg. My trench coat was settled over the victim's legs, and I could see his eyes were blind, filmed with gray. A fine tracery of overloaded veins crawled away from the corners of his eyes, right where laugh lines should be. They were gray as well, pulsing as if thin threads of mercury were running under his skin.
Now that's interesting. Let's see what we're dealing with here, shall we?
I examined him closely, my gaze avoiding his blindness. My aura quivered, sea urchin spikes almost visible, my blue eye turning hot and dry. The victim's blind eyes wandered back and forth in random arcs. He didn't respond to my nearness, which could have meant anything. I jabbed the mirror forward just as his gray-filmed eyes wandered across the precise, unavoidable point in space that would force him to look at himself. The reflection caught and held, my blue eyes straining to pierce layers of etheric interference, like fine-tuning a radio dial to catch the familiar bars of an old song. The mirror cracked, then went flying, jerked from my grip. I moved, quick as a striking snake, my hellbreed strong right hand flashing to close around the victim's throat.
Let thief fall, bring aid the horror.
Oh, God damn it.
I bore down hard, a non-physical movement accompanied by a hardening of physical muscles. Sea urchin shape of my aura trembled on the surface of the visible, spikes starring out hard against the air, light popping on the points. Be gone! In nomine patrii filii et spiritus sancti! I command you! I abjure you! I demand you release this! Exploded forward, throwing me ass over tea kettle. I hit the wall, landed hard on my hip. The cot shredded itself.
Shit!
I was on my feet again without knowing quite how, adrenaline pouring copper through my blood. The victim rose from the ruins of the bed, leather restraints dangling uselessly from his limbs.
Let
The chanting didn't sound Chaldean. It had a lilt to it, unlike Helaton. And it was vaguely familiar. I pulled etheric energy recklessly through the scar, then dashed forward. My foot flashed out, and I caught him full in the face. The wall disintegrated as the victim hit it, and I had no time to think about the damage that might be done to the host body. I centered myself, drew myself up to my full height. Papa Legba! Papa Legba! Papa Legba, close the door! Papa Legba, close the door! Papa Legba, close the door! My blue eye, the left one, the smart one, watered. Then the ether swirled, the sensitized fabric of the room resounding like a plucked thread. Avery chucked a bottle of holy water at the victim. He toppled to the greasy linoleum floor. The room filled with a colorless cigar smoke fume. I tasted rum, thrown back hard against the palate. A silver nail ran through me from crown to soles, and I remembered Mikio's pale face after my first introduction to this type of magic.
Be careful, it does not eat you alive, Milaya.
I was on him, my aura sparking in sudden swirling darkness despite the flood of sunlight rushing through the windows. The shape of the things inhabiting him rose like smoke. Three small humanoid forms, weaving in and out of each other. For a moment I saw them, little boy and little girl, both with crystalline eyes and bowl-cut black hair. The girl in a shift, the boy in a brown loincloth. The shape between them was androgynous, melting first into the girl's body. Then she mutated into the boy. And the third shape whisked them both back out of sight, receding down a long tunnel towards a heavy wooden door. The victim was unconscious, his face slack and empty. I rose to my feet. Every muscle in my body cried out in pain, then subsided into a dull howling.
Ogun, Legba. Ogun, thank you. Muchas gracias. Thank you very much.
What the hell was...
Oh, it's bad news.
I got that much. That smelled like cigars and rum.
Put him in a holding tank downtown. Get me a file on him, too. I need two headshots. Keep the door bolted. Watch him. If you have to, buzz me again.
Great. Okay.
You've never seen Aloha before, have you? An Orisa?
Holy crap. That was it.
Not a normal one, no. We'll get into the details later. Get going. He won't stay knocked out forever, but you should be able to get him downtown. If he wakes up in the back of the car and gives you trouble, smack him in the face with holy water and keep repeating a Hail Mary or something.
I'm Protestant.
Then recite the Nicene Creed. Or the goddamn Dallas Cowboy lineup. Whatever works, just go. I'm gonna go look around.
What for?
For signs of what he's mixed up in. You don't just trip and fall and get a spirit in you, you know.
Ha ha. I suppose you're not gonna help me carry him.
Saul will. I glanced over at my ware again. He nodded slightly. And his jaw was set. I couldn't think why, until something warm and stinging dropped into my eyes. I touched my forehead and discovered a shallow slice. Oh, shit. I'm bleeding.
Oh, hanging around you is a never-ending adventure.
Would you shut up and get this guy locked up before he does anything else? After the body was finally removed, I inspected the place. Bare fridge, bare cupboards. Only a can of refried beans and a paper bag of masika, as well as a bottle of vinegar for some reason. Threadbare clothes, two uniform shirts with the victim's name embroidered on them, a pair of busted sneakers in the closet. It was like a monk's cell, I was examining the remnants of the cot, staring at the twisted curlicues of metal and sharp sheared-off ends, when Saul reappeared through the open door.
Anything?
Nothing. If he's a follower, he's got it well hidden.
That wasn't a possessor.
Nope, it wasn't. It was an Orisa. Or a Loa. Six of one, half a dozen of the other. Whatever branch of magic this guy's into.
He didn't smell like magic. Why didn't it cut the leather straps?
Leather was once living. And it has a greater elasticity when it comes to that kind of load. No, he didn't smell like magic. The twins don't usually take people without...
The twins?
Yeah, you've heard of voodoo, right? Santeria? Candomblé?
Santeria? A little. Popular down in the barrio. I suppose now isn't the time to admit I'm behind on my reading.
Well, forget what you've seen in the movies. Voodoo is different. People don't just make bargains with Hellbreed. There's a bunch of other inhuman intelligences out there. They make contact for all sorts of reasons. We have things spirits want. They have things we want. And everybody trades.
Got that? So, voodoo in particular? Santeria? Candomble?
Candomble. Basically, they interact with the same species of intelligence, but not the same groups. There's some crossover, but they're like different families. Spirits halfway between us and God, they say. They're not from hell. And generally, a practitioner is safe from being contaminated by a possessor. Though they're not immune to physical harm from a hell breed. Hell generally doesn't mix with voodoo.
That's not what's bothering you, though.
What's bothering me is that the Loa don't step in where they're not invited. Not without good reason. And that was the twins. At least, I'm reasonably sure it was one of their aspects.
Bad news?
Not particularly good news. We'll see. If he was mixed up in something, we'll find out. I'll pick up the file from Avery
and... Dinner first.
Dinner first. This doesn't look right. It makes my weirdo meter tingle like mad.
That's saying something. Come on. Let's close this up and go home.
In a second. I move towards the small bathroom. Bar of coal tar soap in the ringed bathtub. Toothbrush, box of baking soda, and a straight razor in a ceramic mug next to the sink. The razor was a nice one. Antique. Had to be 1920s if my guess was good. A black scale with mother-of-pearl inlay, and well-preserved steel, sharp as a suicide's whisper. I flicked it open, saw the shadow of blue swirling under the surface of the metal. I blinked, and it was gone. Now that's interesting. I dug in my pocket for a Ziploc baggie and found one.
What have you got in there?
Clue. Come on, I'm hungry, and I need to work some of these nerves off. Maybe you'll help me with that.
Sure made a mess of this place.
Can't have an exorcism without breaking a few beds. If he's clean, we'll figure something out.
And if he's not?
Then a smashed-up apartment is the least of his worries. Saul knocked me across the length of the sparring room, dying sunlight falling liquid through the windows, sweat shining on both of us. I stamped my back foot down hard, dipped and spun as he advanced on me. The sweep took his legs out from under him. He hit hard. I leapt and had my fist drawn back, my other hand tangled in his silver scarred shorn hair. Give up?
You haven't won yet.
Wanna keep going? Best 2 out of 3. Or should we take this somewhere else?
Don't know if you're ready.
Oh, I'm ready. I was definitely ready for more than just sparring.
Oh, yeah?
He surged up. I pushed him down and realized my mistake a split second too late. His knees came up, my balance off by a critical fraction. I tipped, and Saul rolled over me. Saul held me down as his head dipped. smell of leather, of cherry charvel smoke.
Oh!
The good scent of a healthy male and the dry sleekness of cat fur. His mouth found mine. It was a softness blooming, nailing me in place. My body loosened, tingles flooding me. It was a far cleaner feeling than the scar's sick heat. I kissed him with my heart flooding out through the play of tongue and lips. He started purring, a rumble spreading out in waves. Each concentric circle of that purr stroked along my skin. My doorbell goes off so seldom, I always forget between times that I have it deliberately loud.
Shit!
Saul sat up. I straightened. There wasn't a quiver or a peep from my hackles. My intuition was quiet for once. Which didn't mean that there wasn't something bad at the door.
It could be just a very quiet something bad. Then again, why would anything that valued its life and had mayhem on its mind ring my doorbell instead of just busting in to lay some hurt on me?
I bounced to my feet.
Jill!
Hang on, Catkin. A convenient table on the way to the door gave me a gun. I stopped at the door, placing my ear to the wood. Through my heightened senses, I could detect breathing and a human pulse, just a little elevated.
Whoever it is, they're harmless.
A skinny Hispanic teenager, smelling of Corona and refried beans, stood on my front step. He wore the 51 colors, a red bandana, knotted around one thin bicep. Beneath the edge of a hairnet keeping his dark, limp hair back, he had a face that belonged on an Aztec codex, or at least his proud bird-beak nose did. Sallow, pitted skin and a pair of dead, empty eyes showed why he'd never be handsome. I recognized him a split second after I realized what he was standing there for. He had the look.
Oh no, not Mal. Gilberto Rosario Gonzalez Ayala.
Hola, bruja.
What the bloody blue blazes do you want?
Took me a while to find your house.
There's a reason for that.
I eyed him, taking in the flannel shirt, the torn jeans. And there it was under the stark flatness of his expression.
I know that look. It's hunger.
I knew I hadn't seen the last of that kid. The warehouse is on the wrong side of the tracks, of course. I spent the first half of my life trying to get away from the wrong side, and now it's where I spend most of my time. I barely have any idea what it's like over on the decent side of town. Unless I'm working a case with its tentacles up among the rich and powerful.
I think that's referred to as irony.
He kept quiet, watching me. The sun was going down, dusk dyeing the west in bright pink and orange scarves.
Almost time to get ready for the night.
Which would mean racking in more ammo and dropping by Galena's, since she had another load of blessed silver for me. Before that, I had to do some quiet digging, starting with the file on Avery's victim from the last night.
You know why I'm here, bruja. I owe you a beer. And we got business.
Yes, I do know why you're here. But you still have to say it. What kind of business? I'm not involved with petty gang warfare.
I ain't here for Ramon. We got other business.
Like what, Gilberto?
Bruja business. With what you do.
I held his gaze for a long 15 seconds. Saul appeared behind me, a silent presence. My nostrils flared. It was there, too. The flat, odorless reek of desperation with the burnt sugar edge of wanting. He didn't quite break. But he did pale the slightest bit and step back, as if my mismatched eyes had somehow changed. I knew they hadn't. There was none of the dry burning that would tell me my blue eye was doing funny things. But even the bravest tend to get a little weirded out when I stare at the bridge of the nose. The gaze grows piercing when you do that, especially if you just soft focus, and you begin to look like you're staring through someone's head. Rifling through their most intimate memories. It's a tough look to pull off while covered in dry sweat, rucked up in a t-shirt and leather pants, and frustrated enough to chew nails. I still managed.
I know what you do. I want to do it too.
Oh, go home, Paquito. Leave the night alone and don't darken my door again. I half turned, and Saul stood close behind me, his hair mussed and high color blooming in his cheeks, one dark eyebrow elegantly lifted. Hopefully, he'll go away. I'm gonna hit the shower.
What if he rings the bell again?
Ignore him.